Jesus, who died, now glorified. He's the King of all kings. Today, the kids are going to, sorry for calling you kids. The people that usually go over to junior church once a month, they stay in the service, and they're going to do that today. If you need to, the nursery's open. You can open the curtains if somebody needs to go back. But the kids are going to be in service today. This is a G-rated message. Maybe. I do have one clarification. I'm not too worried about offending people if what I'm saying is accurate. I just want to make sure that I was understood. Last week I said a few things, and I talked to Chris. I said, was I clear on this? So I made a comment about, in the message about, we talked about sex trafficking a little bit. I said, sometimes we say that happens in India because they have so many kids that you can't even keep track of them. I use that in my sarcastic, I change my voice, like, well, that usually means I'm being sarcastic. I didn't say that, but I just changed my voice when I said it. So I wanted you all to know, I was saying sometimes we make excuses for why we allow things to continue in other parts of the world and don't do anything about it. I was using my sarcastic voice. Now we're all on the same page, right? Okay, my brother-in-law is from India, so I care about people from India. Minnie doesn't. Or she's sad about it, too. Today we're going to actually talk about the very end of this chapter that we read in the story this past week. We talked in Sunday school about Samuel and how God raised him up and how he anointed King Saul as the first king. And Susie pointed out that when Saul began to be king, he was not a proud, arrogant person, which is important to know. What we're going to see by the end of the day, here's the message in a nutshell, that when you take on absolute power, it will corrupt you. When you set yourself up as the final authority on everything there is to be, you will have problems. And what we'll see is Saul tried to do that. As he gained more power and more confidence, he started looking at God less and creating his own rules, and that was the problem. So we're going to walk through that today. What's happened up to this point, we talked last week. I think my battery's dying. Last week we talked about, we've been talking about the judges. And for a period, while the Israelites were out, God didn't initially start and say, okay, here's your king. When the Israelites needed something, God would raise up a person to help them through it. So we have the story of Samson. They were being attacked. The Israelites were being attacked and oppressed by the Philistines. So God raised up, literally, from the child up, this really strong man who is a great warrior and tried to free them from the Philistines. We have the story of Gideon, who was hiding in a pit, and God came to him and said, hey, mighty man. And he's like, are you talking to me? I'm hiding. How God raised up Gideon because Gideon obeyed. There's a story about a lady named Deborah who obeyed, and God raised her up. And we see a few people scattered throughout the history that were willing to obey God. Sometimes what happened is they obeyed God for a while, and then they started to slack off. And most of the stories in the Old Testament end up by saying, and the people did what was right in their own eyes. Well, after a while, they got tired of this. The general public said, when are we going to have a leader who we can look to and say, that's our leader? They finally started saying, you know what, let's have someone be our king. All the other nations have a king. We want a king like them. We're going to talk about having a king, which is a little difficult for us as Americans because we do live, my firm belief is that we do live in the country that has the potential to be the greatest country in the entire world. I do believe that we have our system of government the way it's supposed to run, should be, because we have a series of checks and balances. Our country is set up as we're a republic. So we have a group of people that make decisions, and we have filters. So we have the different branches of our government. If you already know this, great. If not, here's a review. We have the legislative, the executive, and the judicial. And this is going to be, we're going to see this throughout the story today. We have three branches of government that keep each other in check. So the legislative branch, they write laws. we think this should be law. They say that they look at what's best for the country, and then they bring those for a vote. They vote on it and say, yes, this should be law. Then they send it to the executive branch. He's the one that signs the laws that says, yes, this will be law. So the executive branch keeps the legislative branch in check, and they kind of work both ways. One of them writes it. The other one says it's law when he signs it. And then the third branch is the judicial, which they determine who does and who does not follow the law that's the way it's supposed to work. They determine who has followed the law that has been written. So we have three groups of people that are supposed to work for the good of the United States citizens. That's how it's set up. And when it works right, it's beautiful. Can't beat it. What happens, we see here, is that we all agree. The reason we did this is because we came from England. It was a monarchy. And they found that when one person determines everything, it turns out to be a mess. So we didn't want one person setting all of the laws, writing the laws, making them law, and then enforcing the laws. We didn't want one person to do all that, because when you have a bad leader, you could have a bad country. One person can change everything. So as a group, we decided we want checks and balances so the center of control is not in one person. The irony is that when we come to our own lives, we say just the opposite. We want to be the final say. Nobody can tell me what to do. Nobody should tell me where to go. It's my life. I'll run it the way I want. We believe that giving someone absolute power corrupts them when it applies to other people, but not me, because I'm better than all those people, and I make the right decisions 100% of the time. And even if I don't make them right, it's not your business. This is my life. Stay out of it. I get to determine what I do. It affects me. It's not you, which is faulty thinking. If you think your life only affects you, you're wrong. That's the nice way of saying it. All of our lives have an impact on everyone else, but we take this principle, no one person should have control over everything when it's someone else. And then we look at ourselves and say, well, I want to give myself control over everything. And which is what Saul did, King Saul. He said, eventually, he began saying, I am the king, this is the way I want it to do. This is the way I want it to run. And we look at this, we try to trace this back. Where did this come from? Where we started off with, we have God as our king. We follow his guidance. We follow his rules. And when we do that, we have a good relationship with him. At some point, we started thinking that when I make all the rules and when I follow what I want to do, then life will be good. And when we trace that back to its beginning, we read about this story. I kind of pulled this out. In Genesis chapter 1, there was this serpent who came along. What happened was Adam and Eve had a great relationship. Everything was working wonderfully, perfect, because they followed God's rules. God says, this is how I've designed it to work, and this is what you can eat anything. This is your place. Run and play. Frolic in the grass. Roll around. Pick daisies. Whatever you want to do. But don't eat this fruit. And then Satan comes along and said, did God actually say? Which, if you look at the way our system's set up, he's questioning the legislative power of God. Did God actually make that rule? Did he actually say, didn't he tell you you could eat of anything you want? Did he actually say, don't do this? So Satan questions that. And then he says, God knows when you eat of this tree, your eyes will be open. Well, should God be the only one who knows? Shouldn't you know too? He's the one that's making all the rules right now. If you were to do this, then you have the authority to make right and wrong too, which is the executive, who makes it. And then he says, and if you do this, you surely will not die. because God said you would, but you surely will not die, which is usurping God's judicial authority. He's saying, because God said, if you eat of this tree, you will die. There will be a judgment for it. And Satan comes along and says, well, if you eat of this tree, that judgment that he said is inaccurate. You'll have your own judgment. You get to determine what. You're not going to die. He's wrong. You can be right. So when we see the basis of what's going on here, we can look all the way back to the beginning of, you know, chapter 2, I think is where it starts, of the Bible, and find out that this has been a struggle the whole time, this struggle between I want to be the center of power. I want to be the final authority on everything. When God has set up that when we follow his authority, things are much better. That's where it goes back. And Saul, we see here in 1 Samuel chapter 15, that's where we're going to work from today, 1 Samuel chapter 15, we see that Saul falls into this same problem. He continues to usurp. That means he makes a judgment in place of God. He goes against what God says and says, I'm going to do this anyway. So for you kids, this is how it would apply to you. Your mom or your dad or your aunt or grandma says, I do not want you to give me something. What do your parents tell you not to do sometimes? What, Jameson? Don't eat a lot of cookies. Don't eat cookies before supper. But we decide we're really hungry. And so if we eat a cookie, we won't be hungry anymore. So we go get a cookie and eat it anyway. That's called usurping your parents' authority. You do something. What's something else we do when our parents tell us not to? Not that you would ever do it. Yes. Don't talk to men in white panel vans. I will beat you senseless if you ever do that. Okay, so this person's not good for you. I don't want you hanging around them. Then you sneak around and do it anyways because your mom and dad don't really know what they're talking about because they're good people. Your parents just don't understand. So we make this decision to do something that we know we're not supposed to do, but we're smarter than our parents, and so we do it anyways because they don't really know what they're talking about. I never did that, I'm just saying. Mine revolved around music. Saul does this because the problem is God had said, this is how I want things to work. And when we come to 1 Samuel chapter 15, we find Saul not liking what God says and thinking he has a better plan. And what's interesting is, well, here's what happens. God tells Saul, there's this horrible king. He's been killing people, really mean to them. I want you to go and be the judgment for him. I want you to overthrow them, kill that king. He's doing horrible things. Kill him. We can have a talk about why God says to do that. If it hurts your feelings, I'm sorry. There's a reason for it. Saul says, rather than kill all that stuff, I'm going to take the king prisoner. I'm going to bring him back home. I'm going to take their animals because they have really nice animals. The more animals you have, the wealthier you are. Can you imagine bringing home like 20 goats to your mom and dad? Thinking you'd really scored. That's what Saul does. He finds all these animals and says, I'm going to bring these home and I'm going to be rich. When God had said, don't bring that junk back into my house, but you do it anyway because it's really good. Saul does this, and when Samuel, who is like the preacher, he comes and he says, God tell you to destroy all of this? Saul begins to make some excuses. And what we see here is Saul begins to say, I know this is the way God set it up, but this is the way I want it to work. It began even before Samuel came. Saul couldn't figure out what to do, so Saul, the king, started making sacrifices, which was the job of the priest. So Saul began by saying, I know that I'm not supposed to do this, but I think it's good, so I'm going to do it anyway because it'll get me what I want. And he started making sacrifices. He did the priest job. He's not the priest. Mind your own business. The union would have had a heyday with this one. Stay out of there. Then he disobeyed God by not destroying these things that had been causing so much tragedy in the nation. He brought them back. Maybe he could get a ransom for the king. And Samuel says, you have disobeyed God. And Saul's answer is pretty interesting. In verse 13, when Samuel comes and says, what are you doing? Verse 13 says, Samuel came to Saul, and Saul said to him, blessed are you of the Lord. So he's sucking up. Blessed are you of the Lord. I have carried out the command of the Lord. Huh. Verse 20. Then Saul said to Samuel, I did obey the voice of the Lord and went on the mission that the Lord sent me. So Saul has convinced himself that he's obeying God. God said, you do this, and Saul has done something different, or he has done it differently, but he's convinced himself that it's not God what God wants, but it would be really good for me, so I'm going to tell myself that what I'm doing pleases God. So instead of following the commands of the king, he has made himself the one who writes the laws, enforces the laws, and gets to determine what's right and wrong. Saul has made himself God. He's disobeyed. And what's really interesting, and this is what this passage pulls out here, is that Saul thinks that he can disobey God and still be pleasing to God. And we can sit back here and think, well, that's ridiculous. What kind of knucklehead would think you can disobey God and he'll say, oh, well, I never thought of that. Or, yeah, I know you didn't do what I told you to do, but good job. Like, how many of you as parents would tell your children, do not be out past 9 o'clock, and then when they come home at midnight and tell you they'd been drunk all evening, and then you'd say, oh, well, you know, I never thought of that. Good job. Which is what Saul did. He completely disobeyed and then came back and said, hey, Mom and Dad, I'm home. Aren't you proud of me? That's ridiculous. We don't come home and advertise it. We sneak in the window, try to sleep it off, think maybe they won't notice in the morning. And, you know, that might be a silly example, but we still do these things in our lives, too, where we know God has said, this is the way I want it. And we say, yeah, that's good, but it doesn't work for me. So I'm going to do it differently, and I'm going to say, God, I want you to bless this because I know that you can look at me and you understand. I'm going to do it differently, but it'll still be pleasing to you, which is just as ridiculous as what Saul was doing. And what happens to Saul is God finally says, you know what, I've tried. And the word that we use, that we see in the Bible, he says through Samuel, he says, I regret that I have made Saul king. He has tried to make himself the king, and he has completely disobeyed me. Now I regret that I've made him king. That doesn't mean that God got caught off guard and like, oh, well, I didn't see that coming. Man, I should have thought through that. Our English translation of that says regret. But to help you understand it, we're going to look at one other thing quickly. When Jesus was walking around ministering to people, there's a point where he comes to Jerusalem and he looks over the city of God's children is what it was. He looks over that and he mourns for them. He says, what has this come to? I have so much sorrow for the way things have turned out. That image there is the same kind of image that God is saying to Samuel. I have sorrow over how this has turned out. It didn't surprise him because before Saul ever came king, he said, your kings are going to take your kids, they're going to take your land, they're going to take your food, they're going to be selfish. He knew it was going to happen, but he still had sorrow. Just like when we tell our kids, do this or else, blah, 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 and they start doing it, we have sorrow. We don't regret that we had our children. We have sorrow over the choices that they're making. That's what God is saying here. I have such deep sorrow that things are turning out this way, and he's not listening to me anymore. And here's the most important point of this whole passage, is that there came a time in Saul's life where God determined that he will no longer listen to me. And Saul, and God said, I am going to remove from your life the ability to make the choices that I've, God gave him this ability, and I'm going to remove those from you, and I'm going to put somebody else in who's going to listen. And that's, I don't live in fear, but that's a fear of mine for a while. It was like, well, what if I don't? If I don't do it, and I don't, like, God's not waiting to strike us dead or anything. But how many times are you going to tell your child, if you do that, you're going to be in trouble? If you do that, you're going to be in trouble. There comes a point, you get two warnings. First one, I say it. Second one, are you clear on what I'm telling you right now? Third time, come here. Spare you the stories. When they get older, they'll get one. But, you know, after a while, you realize they are not going to obey me. I need to do something about it. And that's where God came with Saul. He said, he is not going to obey me. He has decided, rather than follow me, he has taken on for himself the legislative, the executive, and the judicial. He has decided he will be the source of authority. And what we see, that ended in tragedy for Saul's life, but God raised up somebody else who would listen. What I want for us is, before it all falls apart, and we're at different points in our lives, but up to this point, we all still have the decision to say, you know what? I was trying to do my own thing, thinking it pleased God, but that's not how he said he wanted it. And some of us say, well, I don't know what God wants me to do. You know, whether it's if you should be a banker or if you should be an electrician, you know, those things, you can't go in here and find it because it's not, well, you know, Brielle's going to be a neurophysicist. Might as well set the bar high, right? It's not in there. But when you want to find out what kind of person God wants me to be, it is in there. What kind of character does he want me to have? And when I learn the character God wants me to have, then I will be able to make the decisions that will take me through life the way he wants me to take them. So he might not spell it out, you know, what's God want for my life? I don't know. When I learn God wants me to be a man of integrity, he wants me to be a husband who loves his wife and treats her well. He wants me to be a dad who's fully engaged in my children's lives. He wants me to be a man at work who can be trusted. Then I can, it's a lot easier to make decisions. Like, does this fall in line with these? No. Okay, well then, it's made. That's what we see for us, is that before it all falls apart, we want to be someone who says, I realize that I am not the final authority. So we believe as a country, no one person should hold all that authority. And I want us to look at ourselves and realize that as an individual, although it feels good and it's American, if you watch commercials, you do believe that you deserve whatever's best for you and forget everybody else. You'll be miserable your whole life. When we look and see that God has set out a way to live it, and when I allow him to be the king, and I can be one of his, can we say servants in the United States? When I do life the way God wants me to do it, things turn out a lot better. And we can see, with a few exceptions, the next king we're going to talk about next week, how things turn out for him. But when I say, you are the one I'll listen to, even when it doesn't always make me feel warm and fuzzy right now, I'm still going to follow you. We have a couple people who have again said, you know what? I want everybody to know who I'm serving. And they want everyone to know who their king is. And Olivia and Tyler have asked to be baptized. They have made a commitment to serve God, and they want everyone to know who their king is. So if you two want to come up, the water's warmer.